that little thing there.
Yeah.
So, well, I usually start out by asking you fellows where you grew up and if you did any ball playing as a kid, you know, what your family thought about it and so on. So could you tell me a little bit about your early years?
Well, my first year I was in the Lexington, Kentucky in the Bluegrass League.
Okay. What year would that have been?
That was in 1920.
Okay. Was your dad a ball player?
No.
What did you
play? I had a couple of uncles were ball players, and not professional ball players, but they played for.
Did you play high school ball or sandlot ball around here?
Yes, I played sandlot ball around.
How old were you when you first played ball as a kid?
Oh, absolutely. As long as I can remember, when I was 8 or 10 years old, I imagine.
Just in the playgrounds around town.
That's
here?
Right. That's before little leagues and so forth. But
you hit the ball farther than the other kids, I'll bet.
Well, I don't know about that. Some of them. That's right.
Okay, and you played high school ball, and. Who signed you to your first professional contract, you remember?
Well, an old newspaper man named Newt Hohen.
Holland?
Hohen.
Hohen.
Hohen, H-O-R-N.
Hohen. Okay.
And he was advertising manager at Nashville, Tennessee. And he sent me, one time he was an old catcher, he played in the Bluegrass League, and I think I was 17 years old that time, and he sent me to Lexington, and I stayed at Lexington a little while, and they got in bad financial circumstances, and they didn't pay off, so.
What year did you go with Lexington, 23 or?
24.
Did Horn see you? Where did he see you play?
All around the sandlots here in Nashville. I was a paper boy around in Tennessee and there, so yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, what did you think about signing a professional contract?
Well, I was all for it. I'd been working in printing office. That's who I ran a printing company, and that's who I was with when I was in baseball, amateur baseball around Nashville. And then I was with Lexington a while, and after that I went up in the hole in West Virginia in the coal fields up there. Old Bill Shoemaker was the old first baseman that managed it.
Is this the same year or the next
year? Same year.
24?
Yeah, 24.
What was the name of that town again?
Holden, West Virginia.
Holden?
Holden, H-O-L-D-E-N.
Oh, I see. They were in the Mountain State League, or?
No, they was in, that's a,
or was that?
That was a company, coal company.
Oh, I see.
That was an independent ball at that time, and then the following year.
Well, tell me, how'd you do at Lexington that year?
Well, I read it, it's been so long ago, I forgot to tell you the truth about it. I was a catcher and an outfielder. And
hit pretty well, as you recall?
Yeah, I hit pretty well there.
You were a home run hitter, right, in the minor leagues?
Well, I hit quite a few home runs in the minor league, yeah.
Okay. Did you like being away from home that first year or so, or did it matter to you?
It didn't matter too much. I enjoyed it.
You enjoyed playing ball?
That's right.
Did it pay you much?
Not too much. I was supposed to get $100 a month at Lexington, and I think I only got expenses the whole time I was there. And
let's see how it sounds so far. The reason why I asked you about how you felt being away from home is yesterday I talked to Kent Greenfield. You know Kent,
yeah,
up in Guthrie? He went up in 19... 22 or 23. Yeah, he was terribly homesick.
He was about a pitcher that came to Greenfield. He had a lot of ability. He just threw it away.
He admits it.
Yeah, I know he. Yeah, I hit against him a lot of times. We come back to Nashville in the winter and we go up to Kentucky after Kent pitched around up there after the season's over, you know. And
pretty fast, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Had a great curveball. Fast. He had a lot of ability.
He said the bottle got him.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was his big trouble.
Yeah, too bad. Well, okay, you're up in Holden then. Did you work at the coal company there very long? Or?
Well, I was supposed to repair coal cars. We mostly played cars behind a shack somewhere. There's four or five professional ball players was on that ball club, including Bill Shoemaker.
Anybody else you can remember?
Well, a boy named Ewing used to be the division down here, and he's dead now, of course.
I come from I'm in northern West Virginia, but I don't know where Holden is.
You know?
I never heard of Holden.
That's right up in the little cold.
Southern part of
the state. I guess it's about 10, 15 miles from Logan, West Virginia.
Oh, we know that area. That's coal mining country, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all up through there. But
did the Lexington team fold? Is that what you said? That's why you went up there?
Yeah. And the following year,
1925,
I went to Knoxville, South Atlantic League. Then I started touring. I started with Knoxville a couple of years. And
how did you happen to go with them? Was there anybody you
know
especially. Somebody there? Or?
Well, I came through Chattanooga that year. Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Strang Nicklin was owner and manager of the Chattanooga Ball Club.
And Strang Nicklin.
Yes, Sammy Strang Nicklin, yeah. And
Joe Engel wasn't there?
No, I was long for Joe Engel. No. I played on it with Joe Engel.
Oh, he was a real promoter, huh?
Yes, he was.
Okay, so that's how you got up to Knoxville then, through this Strang Nicklin?
That's right. I went there. Colonel Moffitt was manager of the ball club. Then I played with Salisbury, and
that's in the Eastern Shore League.
That's somewhere along there.
Is that in 25 also?
No, I was 25 and 26. I was with Knoxville most of the time.
That was, what classification was that?
That's Class B ball. That's South Atlantic League.
Were you owned by anybody, any major league club at all? Or?
Not at that time, no.
Were you hoping you were going to go up, or did you know much about it?
Well, I expected to, but I think for me, I guess the second year in Knoxville, I was sick, I was out. Half of the season, and the following year I went to Alexander, Virginia.
What league was that?
I think that was a
Virginia league, maybe.
No, I don't want to. I'll tell you the truth. I had so many little old leagues right then. And then I went from then to the Southeastern League I think it's Selma, Alabama, the Southeastern League. And I was with them a short while, and I sold to Shreveport in the Texas League. And the same year, I sold to Cleveland in the American League.
How did that come about? You remember how Cleveland got a hold of you?
Well, I was playing in St. Augustine, Florida, and sand about half a foot deep. And old Dutch Hoffman, old ball player, the second baseman, he used to be around New Orleans. He was managing the club, and I came in after one inning. I had a rough day that day, and I was coming. And I thought I'd take my shoes off. That's when they used to dress at the hotel, you know. And I thought I'd take my baseball. He said, "Where are you going, John?" And I said, "I'm going back to the United States." I said, "I'm getting out of here." And he said, "Well, wait a minute now." So we finished that ball game. And he said, "I got another place for you to go. I'm going to send you to the Texas League. I'll get you out of the United States." And, I went to Shreveport. Art Phelan was the manager.
Art Phelan?
Phelan.
Phelan.
P-H-E-L-E-N. Yeah. Phelan. And he, I was only with Shreveport the rest of that year. Well, about a month, I guess, I sold Cleveland.
Did Phelan know somebody in Cleveland, or did they?
No,
I wonder how they found out about you down here in Shreveport.
Slapnick who overlooked me. He bought me from Shreveport.
All right.
I think at that time Shreveport was having a little rough time making ends meet, you know, that league down there. And that's when I played with Pete Kilduff, that fella.
Oh,
he was the second baseman.
Well, he must have been doing very well at Shreveport.
Yeah, I had a great, latter part of that season I was doing great. Yeah, I think the day he bought me, I hit 3 home runs, a triple, and a double.
No wonder he bought you, huh?
At Beaumont, yeah.
That must have been one of your better days.
That was. Well, I guess that was my best day.
Boy, that's 17 total bases.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, how did you travel in all these lower leagues? And you're going around.
Small leagues, my bus. Yeah, traveling all night and play all day.
Sleep in the best hotels, huh?
Half time we just sat in the bus.
Is that right, huh?
And of course went to Texas League and they traveled by train down.
Well,
that's like me going to heaven, the leagues I've been in.
Did they give you much money to live on or to feed yourself?
Well, I forgot how much. I think it was $2 a day meal money. Of course, that was pretty good meal money at that time.
I bet you had a lot of fun, riding those buses, huh?
Oh, we did, yeah.
All night long or whatever.
Yeah, we had a little, was some kind of college state league for a little while that same year.
This is all 27, huh?
I think it's the first part of 27, I was with Cotton State League.
Yeah.
And Bill Pierce was the manager. Bill used to hit the bottom quite often. He'd sit in the back of the bus and get paralyzed. And he said, anybody can play ball and get a nice rest in it. It takes a good ball player to play in the daytime without a nice rest.
Play a lot of cards and things on the game.
Oh, yeah, they.
On the trains and buses.
We all play for fun, though, because we didn't have much money.
Yeah. Well, how'd you feel when you heard you were going up to Cleveland?
I don't know.
Must have been a big thrill, wasn't it?
That was a great feel at the time. Yeah, I finished the season that year with Cleveland. And.
Jack McAllister?
Jack McAllister was the manager there.
And who were some of the players in the team, do you remember?
Joe and Luke Sewell, and George Burns, and Lou Fonseca, and Charles Jameson. That's right after the year, Speaker was managed into that year. Then
he had to resign under a cloud, didn't he?
Yeah, and then that's when Jack McAllister took it over.
He only lasted 1 year, is that right?
Jack McAllister, I think the Peckin' Paul took the club over the following year. That's when the Nickel Plate Railroad bought the Cleveland. And they went out and bought a lot of ball players. That's
the Nickel Plate Railroad?
That's right.
Albert Bradley?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's when they first bought that Cleveland ball club. And they went out and tried to get a good ball club, you know, established ball players at that time. Bill Falk.
Vince Falk.
Mm-hmm.
Was McAllister a very good manager?
Well,
you,
I didn't see
that much of him, I suppose.
I didn't think too much of him. But he was a good baseball man, no doubt about that. He was a scout later on in baseball for a long time.
Homer Suma?
Homer Suma was in right fielder when I first went there.
I always liked that name, Homer Suma.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, he's a good ball player.
I'm going to see.
Johnny Hodapp was a ball player there. He's from Cincinnati.
Yeah, I tried to interview him, but he was busy putting people, burying people.
He's still a funeral business.
Yeah, still is. He's very nice on the phone, but he says, I can't set a time to meet you because I might have a funeral.
That's right.
So I wasn't able to talk to him. I don't know that he wanted to, but he said he was tied up. So I've talked to Luke Sewell. He lives up in Akron. I'm going to see Joey Sewell a couple of days from now, down in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Joe was a wonderful person. And well, Luke was too. Yeah. But Wilson was.
Yeah. Joey's going up to the Hall of Fame on next Monday.
Well, he'll make it.
Yeah. So,
he should make it. I don't think when he's only struck out four times or something like that.
Yeah. I wonder why he struck out so few times. That's a good eye, huh?
He had a good eye, yes.
Who was the first? What about your first game up there in Cleveland? You remember that at all? Anything about it?
I was on the road in Boston. I hit a ball over Flagstaff's head in center field, and he played so deep and everything. He said, well, you can say one thing in baseball. So you're the only guy I ever hit one over his head.
Is that right, huh?
Because he played so deep, you know.
Yeah, it's a deep center field there, too. Mm-hmm. You remember who you were pitching?
I forgot who the pitcher was at that time.
Well, that was quite a way to break in. Was Pinky Schaffner on the team when you were with him at all?
Pinky Schaffner?
Yeah, the pitcher.
I know Pinky. He's from Boston, isn't he?
Well, he lives up out of Cleveland now.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he's retired up there in the little village on the lake. He told me that the first time he pitched a game, he faced Babe Ruth, I guess, with the bases loaded.
Yeah, yeah.
And struck him out. Something like that. It's a wild story.
he could have. Yeah. I played against Ruth that same year in 26.
That was their great year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
I remember Joe Sewell telling me at the time, said, John, today you're going to see the best left-hand pitcher in baseball. And I said, who is that? He said, yeah, well, you'll see. And ball game started, and I started the ball game that day, and that's when the Yankees had that great ball club, you know, and Herb Pennant was a pitcher.
Uh-huh.
And so first time at bat, he threw me a little dinky curveball, hit a line drive in right field. Ruth made a good catch on him. And I said to myself, next time up, same thing happened. Line drive to left, right field, Ruth made another good catch. And he had a little white glove that Ruth did, and everybody used to not think he was a great outfielder. He was. And so I said to myself, I said, gee, this guy's the best left-hander up here, I ain't gonna have trouble. And we were rocking along the last inning, he has big 3-2 or something like that. Had to cut men on, and I was a hitter. And he threw me another little dinky curveball inside. I hit it foul ball. And then he broke a little sharp cut on the outside, right quick, like he had strike two. I took that one. And then the next one, I just batted the next pitch. That exploded. And the curveball exploded. And I was called out, strike three. And I go into the clubhouse, Joe say, see what I mean, John? I said, yeah, I understand. See what I mean?
He was good, huh?
Yeah, he just pitched good enough to win. That was the whole thing. He didn't try to...
I see.
He wants you to make you hit the ball all the time.
I see.
When the men on the bases, though, he kind of slowed.
Yeah.
He kept you from hitting it.
Yeah, I see. Did you have a chance to bat against Walter Johnson?
No, I used to.
About his last year there.
I went to Washington when he was the manager in Washington. Mm-hmm. And after hitting against him in hitting practice, the guy pitching that day didn't have anything. That's the truth.
Is that right?
That's how he just slung a ball. And they said, if you hit him, you hit anybody in the league. That's what you say about Johnson.
I thought the batting practice pitchers were supposed to just lob it up, but
he
didn't do that.
Well, he was just, according to Johnson, he was just lobbing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I talked to ball players that's been up there, you know, for some time, was good ball players. They say he was the greatest, fastest.
Yeah.
I know Lefty Groves in the league that year, and of course, Lefty was the main one at that time.
Yeah.
Strikeout man.
How'd you like him to hit against?
No, I'm not too good. I hit a lot of foul balls off him. That's about the best I could do.
Yeah. Well, if Johnson had been with a winning team, he'd have had more victories than he had.
Oh, he would have.
You know, it's too bad to be with a second division club.
Well, he got beat. He's always 1-0 or something like that. He didn't get beat bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's when Johnson was the manager, then the next year Cronin was the manager.
Yeah, let me look at your record here. I don't follow it through here after you got to Cleveland here.
Well, I went from Cleveland to Baltimore.
You were with Cleveland for how long then?
I belonged to them 3 years.
3 years? 27, 28 here.
Went to see him 28, and I walked him.
What did they? You didn't play much in 28. Were you with them all season?
No, I just was in the spring training always. And that's Bill Evans was the general manager at that time. Peckinpah was the manager, and he said, let me go to Baltimore.
They had a pretty good outfield, tough to break into, wasn't it?
Washington?
No, the Indians in 28. Wasn't there outfield?
Oh, yeah, that was.
That's the reason they let you go, probably.
Yeah, well, they had Abel and
Jameson still
there. Jameson, Bill Falk, and Sumer was still there, and Bob Seeds.
Was that kind of disappointing then to go back down to Baltimore? Or?
Well, not exactly.
You like to play ball, huh?
I wanted to play somewhere, so I went to Baltimore. That was a good minor league ball club in the National League at that time.
They're better than some of the major league teams.
That's when Mazel had, that's what Jack Dunn still owned. His wife, he died a year before that. And his wife was the owner of the ball club. When I first went there, and Mazel was the manager, and that's when I first met Joe Hauser.
Oh, yeah. He had a great year there in 30. Were you with him in 30?
Yeah.
He hit about 63 home runs or something?
Yeah, he hit 50 some more. I think I hit 40 some
more. Is that right?
That year. Uh-huh. And then I played with Joe again in Minneapolis.
Oh, that's when he hit 69.
Hit 69 in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I hit 43 in Minneapolis too.
The same year he hit these?
Not
the same
year. This is later than the following year. Other year there. I was from Minneapolis, latter part of the 30s.
A long time ago.
35, somewhere along there. I was in Baltimore 2 years, they sold me to Washington. Washington sent me to Chattanooga on option. That's when I met Joe England. And I stayed with him couple of years. I was fooling around there and couldn't get away from it. And he finally let me go to Mike Kelly in Minneapolis.
Tell me about Roger Peckinpah. Do you remember much of him at all?
Not too much. I don't remember.
You weren't with him that long, that 28.
No, I was with him. Spring training, the Super Bowl games, and playing. And
did Cleveland still own you when you were sent down to Baltimore?
No, they still haven't. They'd already sent me out twice. I was in Albany 1 year. I thought that's the one that
in Eastern League?
Eastern League. Bill McCoy was the manager.
Maybe that was in 28. You went to Baltimore in 29 then. Could that be it?
That's right. I was at Bessie. Went to Baltimore. And let's see, I was with Albany in 29. I went to Baltimore in 30.
Oh,
I was at 30 and 31.
Yeah.
Then they sold me to Washington. Washington sent me to Chattanooga in 32.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think I hit about 390 in the whole year.
How many home runs, you remember?
I didn't hit too many home runs. I hit a lot of doubles that year.
And then big field, maybe?
That was a big ballpark.
Were you pretty fast? Yeah. Leg out hits or steal bases or?
No, not especially. I was just. I hit a lot of doubles and.
Was Baltimore a pretty big ballpark, or was it?
No, that was just a. Well, it left field was kind of short. Right field was about 320 or something like that.
Did you hit to all fields, or did you pull the ball? Or?
Well, I hit to all fields. I didn't hit.
You didn't hit for home runs necessarily. Or did you swing for home runs, or?
No, I think I hit. No, it was 34 home runs the first year with Baltimore, and about the same amount the following year.
But when you were at bat, did you have your mind on a home run or on a base hit?
No,
went with the pitch, huh?
Just went with the pitch, trying to hit the ball. Yeah. Yeah.
Not like they do it today, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Sure today, that ball we play with now, though, a little bitty boys hit the ball out of the park now.
Pretty lively. 1930, though, the ball was lively, wasn't it? Didn't they
line it up then? Yeah, I think it was. It was kind of.
That was the year Hack Wilson hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah, he hit that.
Hauser hit his 63, I guess. Well, who was the manager just down at Baltimore then?
Fritz Maisel.
Yeah. Was Eddie Onslow?
That was an old Yankee, third baseman, Chris Mazur.
Was Eddie Onslow with the team then?
No, he's
at
Liverpool then, I think.
I see. He lives up in Ohio, not too far from me. I talked to him a couple of times.
Then finally, Engel let me go to Mike Kelly in Minneapolis. I went there and stayed there a bit. Well, I finished the season. Then I was with them the whole season the following year. So that's when I was sold to the Chicago Cubs.
Okay. Says you were back with Washington in 34 for a few games.
I was with Chattanooga. They brought me up to Washington for a few games. And
how about Joe Cronin?
I told a lot of Joe Cronin. Uh-huh. He was a good manager.
Uh-huh. He knew his baseball, huh?
Oh, yeah. He was a good baseball man.
Good player. Sometimes
yes,
sometimes good players don't make good managers.
That's so. Right. Well, he was a good manager. Uh-huh. Boston must have thought so because they gave a lot of money for him at that time.
Yeah, it sure did.
And Joe won. I didn't get along with Griffith.
Oh.
Bob Griffith and Joe wanted to keep me. I was going pretty good in Washington. When I up there from Joe wanted to keep me, but Eagle had a chance to win down the Southern League.
Want to make sure it's still going, so.
Yeah, I couldn't keep William Engel. We won a pennant the first year down there in 32. We went to Penn in Chattanooga, and well, Holly Boston was there too. Same year I was there.
That's when Cleveland Bottom brought him up to 33. How about playing here in Nashville? You never belonged to the Nashville club?
Yes, for a short while. I finished the season that year with the Cubs, and the next year, full season, then I went to the summer San Francisco as Joe Marty deal. And I hurt my knee. I went and played a short while with San Francisco. I hurt my knee, put it bad, and I just sat on the bench the rest of the season.
Joe Marty was going to be another Joe DiMaggio, wasn't he?
Yeah, supposed to be. He
didn't quite make it.
No, he... It wasn't quite... It wasn't 2 minutes Joe DiMaggio. No. His brother was as good of outfield as he was.
Dominic.
Dominic, yes. Yeah. I played with Dominic in San Francisco. And he's the worst-looking ball player I ever saw in spring training. He threw him a sidearm curveball, he'd fall down. And old dude was the manager of the club. I said, that guy said, he won't hit 100 in this league. He said, he hit over 300. He said, you don't know these guys. And he did hit over 300. Next year he hit 380, I think.
How about the old ballpark here in Nashville?
Oh, the Soffordale?
Yeah, is that the park that had all the hills?
Yeah.
Did you play out there in right field?
Yeah, I played right field.
How do you play a field built like that?
Oh, it's just an embankment or something like that.
I thought they had
one worse one in Boston at one time. Their field in Boston was worse than one in Nashville.
Well, it's pretty short right field in Nashville, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That big high fence, and I think it's 200 and some feet. It was not very far.
Yeah.
No, that year, so I came back to Nashville here, and I think they had given one down here in Nashville, that short right field, you know, and we trained in New Orleans, you know, Cleveland did for about three or four years, and Larry was a general manager in New Orleans.
Gilbert? Who was it?
Gilbert.
Yeah.
He got me here in Nashville, and I couldn't hit the ball right field. Swinging the ball, my knee jumped out on me.
Oh,
that's
right.
When I hurt my knee in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so, meanwhile, I played for Hornby one time, and he was managing Baltimore again at that time.
How'd you like him?
I like Hornby. Yeah, I thought he was a good manager. A lot of people didn't like him because he was a little strict. But he was always nice to me. I went there. So my knee was still bad, I couldn't help him. I sat around warm up kick pitches and stuff like that. Warm up the rest of that year. And the following year,
30.
I had my knee off. I went to the Vanderbilt Hospital out here to see Dr. Regent.
What year did this be now, 36 or?
30, let's see, I was 35 and 36.
You went to Frisco in 35, was it?
And I went to 37 when I went to San Francisco. And then I went back.
So I must have heard it that year then, huh?
Yeah. And then following year I came back to Nashville to him. And I didn't expect to swing anymore. So I told him, I said, so go out and see Dr. Regent about your knee. See what he says about it. And I went out to Vanderbilt Hospital to him. He sent me down in a chair, grabbed hold of my foot, and worked my knee. He said, you got 3 injuries there. I can fix one of them. I can still fix it where you can play ball if you want to. I said, well, I want to. And so he operated on my knee, took that cartilage out. And so meanwhile, Tommy Thompson used to be with pitcher used to be with Washington. He was over at Baltimore. He was Hornets' coach at that time. And Jack, I forgot his name, man. He, finally, he went to Philadelphia as general manager. Jack,
the Phillies or the A's?
Phillies. And he told me to get my release from Baltimore if I'd manage the club for him the next year. And I agreed with it. And he got my release from me, sent it to me. And I met him in Cincinnati for the meeting. And the club he promised me, he didn't have. So he said, well, I said, John, you got your release. And if you can bail yourself, go ahead and get you another job. He offered me some little bit of town, some little league or something like that. I haven't been through that too much. I don't want that. And I saw Johnny Fredericks was managing Portland, Oregon. I met him at the meeting in Cincinnati. And he asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm a free agent. I'm not doing anything right now. I said, well, how about coming with us? And I explained to him about my knee and everything like that. I said, I don't know if I can help you or not. I just had my knee operated on during the winter. And I said, I've been working out, running with baseball shoes on. And he said, well, how about I sign a contract with us? And so I, okay.
That was at Portland then?
And at Portland, Oregon.
For about 38
season? I think it was 38 or 39. 38, I think. Then I stayed with Portland for 46 or 7.
Oh. How did he play?
I played that by 8 years. About 8 years.
How was the knee?
It wasn't what you call 100%, but I could. It didn't bother me too much. I could play pretty good.
Huh? You were with them longer than any other team, then, weren't you?
Yeah, I believe it was. I was pulled along in any club. I was there by, let's see. I played under Marv Owen there. He won it.
Played during the war then, out there?
Yeah. Yes, and Portland saw me as Seattle, with Bill Skip. That's my last year that when we played in the Coast League. Then next year, I try to get my release from Seattle. I figured all the ball players be coming back from out of the Army, you know, and I was wasting my time to going out there as old as I was. And they wouldn't let me go with it at that time. So I started operating out of a restaurant here in Nashville. And they decided to let me send my release to me.
You had a restaurant? You had this before this time, or
no?
You just bought it then.
Yeah, I did. So that's about it, I imagine.
What did you do in the off seasons? Work anywhere?
Back in all of the, there wasn't many things to do in the off season. A ball player, because he went in his own business or something like that.
Did you like to hunt and fish?
Yeah, I used to do quite a bit of hunting, not too much fishing. I tried to fish, but I never could do much good. I was a bad fisherman. I'm a pretty good hunter, though. Well, I tried that kiddie league up there, but that's when all them boys come back from the Army, you know. And you got to tell them everything. And then the Army, they were told to do. do this, do that, do that, and they went by that in baseball too,
yeah,
when they got out.
Just check and see how we're doing here. Tell me how you got along with the umpires.
Oh, I don't know. I got along pretty good with most of them. Some of them I didn't, and you know, like, that's all there is.
Yeah.
I was a kind of hothead, I guess, a little bit when I was in baseball. I never could get as good as I thought I was.
You get thrown out of many games?
Well, not too many. No, I guess I get thrown out two or three times a year, something like that, or three or four.
I think the umpires do a pretty good job overall.
Oh, yes, sir, I sure do. It's been so long ago since, I don't know how they're doing now, but I know back in that time there were some awful good umpires back in those days, in the minor leagues and big league too.
So you recall in your career anything really funny, any funny things happening during games? You know, crazy things are always happening in ball games. Does anything stand out
in
your mind?
There's a lot of things. Tell how many things happened. I can't recall right offhand.
Nothing stands out, you know. I like to get some of these funny stories, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't hand. I don't remember any right now, but I know it must have been a lot of them.
Every time I go to a game, I think to myself, what will I see in this game that never happened before?
Yeah.
Something always happens, you know. It's really crazy. It's one of the great attractions of the game. So much can happen. How about a big thrill? Any thrills?
Well, that's one of the biggest thrills I ever had in baseball. I went in a pinch hit against Dizzy Dean when he was good at that time. And with two men on, and he struck me out on three pitches. And Charlie Grimm was managing the Cubs then. And I said, Charlie, let me finish this game. I beat him 4 days over you, just let me stay in there. And that was about the seventh inning. Something just told me I was, and I came back up. It was two outs, and there was two hitters in front of me. That was Hack and Hartnett. And Hack hit a ball back to Diz on the mound. He misjudged the ball, hit him in the chest, bounced off, he beat it out. And Hardy was the next hitter. Hit a ball in a hound. Just finally got over Collins' head at first base. And it was two on. So, Diz always, I knew how he was going to pitch me. Diz come all that way, the fastball would jump about that much. I buzz all that to me. I said, John, anytime the guy's fast and the ball's rising, he always try to top the ball. Look, hit it on top. And he was all that was a good hitter.
Yeah.
And Buzz is dead now. He died in Minneapolis. Yeah. And I saw what he told me at that time, see. I looked for the ball right there. I knew that's where he was going. So he had good control. He could. And the first pitch, I hit over the right field from the wall and make the field and beat him.
It was a big thrill. Was that in 1934, probably?
Yeah, that's when Diz followed me and I started around the bases, and Diz followed me all around the bases. He called me everything all the way around the bases. Of course, he couldn't make me mad then.
It was great. Well, that was the year the Cardinals had that great team, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's Cook won it in 35.
Yeah.
35 and 35.
Winning streak, yeah. Were you with them then, or? That was the year.
I went to the Cubs in the latter part of 35. I went.
Oh.
They played Detroit that year. I went out to play the World Series. But, I like one day being there in time to be able to play the World Series. I missed out on that.
Right?
And I was out with the Cubs in the rest of 35 and 36. This was in 36.
Dean, you mean?
Yeah, I think we finished tied for second place with St. Louis.
Yeah, the Giants won that year.
Giants won the pennant. Terry.
Kind of a guy was Hack Wilson.
Yeah, he was gone. I went there with the guy Gallant, Jim Ray, and Stanback. And all the old Giants third baseman, what was his name?
Lindstrom.
Lindstrom was played center field, Land left field, Denver in right field. You know, and they had Klein. Yeah, I was there too. Right. Chuck Klein.
Yeah. Great experiences you've had, huh?
Oh, I had a lot of fun in baseball. I enjoyed it very much.
You have any feeling why you weren't up longer in the big time? Or?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't too good at outfield, but I've always been a good hitter. And this happens just one of those things, you know.
There's always some pretty good people in front of you, it seems like, too.
Yeah. The outfields. I had some pretty good competition when I was up there.
Nick Cullop, when we...
Yeah, that's right.
You remember much about him?
Well, I knew... He was there when Cleveland was me. You know, I played against him in the Southern League here with Atlanta. Well, when he managed Milwaukee, I played.
Oh,
I've been happy when he managed Milwaukee. And he's on Columbus, too, when Columbus, Ohio, and the American Association, Nick was.
I've talked to him a couple of times. He lives in Columbus now.
He does?
He's got a bad leg.
Yeah, well, I got a new hip put in, complete hip, yeah.
All right.
Well, the separation, the x-ray show about that much.
Huh.
You got the hurt in the head. I've been in the beer business for about, 18 years here. I'm working with Johnny Beasley. I guess you remember Johnny Beasley.
Oh, the Cardinal pitcher.
Yeah, he had his agency here for Falstaff for a long time.
I have people I interview. I'd like to have them sign the ball here for me. There's Kent Greenfield signed it yesterday, so I wonder if you would sign any place on there, please. I think that pen works. Hard to write on that thing, huh?
Yes,
I often wondered how the ball players did it when they had so many to sign.
Babe Ruth is the best I ever saw sign a ball.
Did you ever see him sign a ball?
Yeah.
I was told that he didn't sign those. Somebody else signed them for him.
No, I've seen him sign.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I was told.
I guess he's. I think he had a stamp after after a while. He had to sign so damn many, you know.
I was told that Art Fletcher, or Charlie O'Leary, mm-hmm. I was told signed a lot of his. Did you ever get to talk to the Babe much? Or?
No. I mean, when I was in Albany, the only thing he ever said to me when he came in with sliding catch off of me on a line drive. And yeah, I was going out to left field. He was coming in from right field. And he said, "Sorry, kid."
Everybody was kid, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was the greatest of Ruth was, he? Hank Aaron, of course, was a great ball player. No doubt about that, but I don't think anybody compared with Ruth.
Did you see Cobb play much or at all? Or?
Well, he was the man of Detroit when I first went to Cleveland, and then he was all the athletic for a little while. No, he was about through then. So they had... He had a hard time breaking in that Detroit ball club, even Cobb. That's when they had Fothergill and...
Harry Heilman
and... somebody else hitting about 400.
Yeah. Heine Manush, I guess.
Heine Manush was one of them, yeah.
Well, this matter of... which Kent Greenfield mentioned about his drinking... how did they do much of this during Prohibition?
Oh, up in that part of the country, there's plenty of whiskey at any time.
The old revenueers had trouble with it. Did a lot of drinking among ball players, as far as you recall? Or?
Yeah, I think so.
Some didn't, some
most
didn't.
Most on the big league and then in the minor.
Did the managers try to keep it in check, or they?
Oh yeah, they didn't approve of it, of course, but. Yeah.
Yes, it's.
I like Harley Boston. He had a reputation of drinking, you know, but he didn't drink much. He couldn't drink. He'd had 5-6 drink, and he'd go nuts. Yeah, that's how it used to get him getting so much trouble by drinking and everything like that. But his wife had died here last year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did he die?
Harley's been dead about 5 years now. He had a heart attack. He was coaching Vanderbilt when he died.
Oh. Did he go to Vanderbilt?
No, he went to this. I'd say some cars down Louisiana. That's where he's from, Louisiana. He married a Nashville girl there and made his home here after.
Did you know Johnny Gooch?
Oh yeah, Johnny. He died right before last, I think. Oh,
yeah. How's it
going?
Yeah,
I know Johnny. Charlie Gooch, I know it's in that book too.
Oh, is that a brother of his?
Uh-huh.
He played too, huh?
Yeah, Johnny and we were talking to the man the other day about him after he had a bat factory out here after this.
Gooch did?
I don't know. Nice. For a while. And I was talking to a fellow when he was president of this lumber yard out there when he was. Gooch used to have his office right next to his in that lumber yard. And he was talking about Gooch. He thought a lot of Gooch. And I said, he'd probably be here today if he'd do that. Going against the doctor's orders. He said, hell, he wouldn't pay no attention to anybody, though.
How about Red Lucas?
Red's still in town. You see Red?
No, I couldn't reach him. I guess he's around, but he wasn't home. So.
Yeah, he lives on Greenwood Avenue or somewhere out there.
I gave him a call, but I couldn't get an answer. So.
Yeah, old Red's still around. I see him every once in a while. We'll have those old timers or something like that. In baseball, every year here. Red's always there.
Do you have any, in your years in minor league ball, in the majors too, are there any parks you like to play in particularly more than others? Are they all pretty much the same?
Well, I'd think so.
Had some great old parks in
there. I like the Chattanooga Ballpark. That's a good ballpark. Good playing field in Chattanooga.
Well, you retired from baseball about 1946 or so?
Let's see, I think I managed Union City in 42, I think it was last year I was in baseball.
How'd you like managing?
I went to a bad time. All the inexperienced ball players got to come out of the Army and they. And I had a bad ball club start with. I think it was the second day of the season I had to pitch a third baseman. He only wanted to throw hard.
A very good experience, I guess.
Yeah, it was experiencing.
I was in the Kitty League, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
42. Was there a fellow named Jim Mills in the league that year, do you remember?
Jim Mills? No, I don't think so.
Guess he may have been a little earlier. So what'd you do then after you?
That's when I went to work for
Beasley.
That's when he first took Falstaff over here in Nashville. And the brewery branch, he worked for the brewery. And they. And I worked for him for quite some time. Then the last 2 years, I worked for Ellis Cook over at Fat Blue Ribbon. And, Paul City.
Salesman, you travel around?
Yeah.
Well, how long you been retired now?
Oh, I've been 5-6 years now. That's when I had the hip operation about 6 years ago. That's when I had to retire.
Do you still have an interest in baseball?
I like to. I watch all games on television. And it wasn't that many. I haven't got baseball here anymore. I watch semi players.
You get the sporting news at all, or?
No, I don't. I haven't had a sport news for quite a while. I used to get it all the time.
Not much baseball in it anymore.
No, it's all football and
other sports.
All the sports is in there now.
Even like it used to be when Taylor Spink had it.
That's right. He was all baseball when he had it.
And during the winter months, it'd just be, where there's no other sports really, just be solid baseball news, you know.
That's right.
Now in the winter months in sporting news, there's very little baseball news. It's not what it used to be. Did you keep a scrapbook?
Oh, yeah, I kept one. I think I thrown away a lot of stuff the other day.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, dear. I collect all those old things. You don't have anything laying around still, do you?
No, I got something up in there. I forgot what.
Got any pictures or anything I could see of your playing days?
Let's see. See if I can get this.
Well, that was in effect the end of the interview, although some things came on later which might have been good to have the tape on, but everything was packed away by that time. Now, this is Tuesday evening, August 2nd, 1977. I'm in the bathroom of our motel room in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in here because I didn't want to disturb Kathy and Rita in the room. I make these comments on this interview. Now let me review the day's activities. We stayed last night, August 1st, in Clarksville, about 50 miles northwest of Nashville, where I'd hoped to interview Horace Lisenby. We'd gotten our room there and all ready to set up an interview, and I called up and he couldn't see me. So there we were. I had the Kent Greenfield interview that afternoon. But the plan was to come in here to Nashville and today and see Red Lucas. I had planned to see Johnny Gooch and Red Lucas, but Gooch was dead, and we got in to see Lucas. We went out to his house. We found it without much trouble on the north side of town, but no one was there. I talked to a neighbor lady who said she didn't think they had left town. In fact, she was pretty sure, but she couldn't see why they weren't there. Lucas is a widower now. His wife has died last spring, and a maiden daughter, who's a school teacher, lives with them there. She said he was very nice and would probably like to have an interview. but he wasn't there, so we then left and went around town, went to the Hermitage, Andrew Jackson's home, and passed by Grand Ole Opryland, or Opryland USA, a fabulous Disney World type of amusement center on the north edge of town. They built a new Grand Ole Opry House, and tremendous motel there, which will, Holiday Inn will pale beside it. Went on to the Hermitage, spent an hour or so there. We didn't go through the building because the Hermitage itself, because of such a line of tourists lined up there, would have taken an hour of just waiting in line. We didn't really feel it was worth that. We went and saw the film of Jackson's life and visited the other sites on the grounds. We didn't go through the museum, through the Hermitage. Then we headed south. It's long, about 12:30, quarter to one now. We're going to go to a Days Inn on the eastern outskirts of Nashville and use this as our basis of operations. We went to Days Inn, but they were all filled up and that hurt us. We were going very early in the afternoon. No business for them to be filled up. Besides, Days was a budget motel. We thought we could save them money. Well, we left there. It was getting hot and irritable. We wended our way back towards town a little bit. This Days Inn being 12, 15 miles outside of town on the east end. And we got into, found this place here, the Expressway Hotel on Route 41, which is maybe 7 or 8 miles, or maybe not quite so far, out from the main part of town, a little bit south east by southeast, something like that. In the afternoon, we went later after we got cool off and fed, we went into town to see the Country Music Hall of Fame, a big building, and there were all kinds of exhibits and plaques. Gold Star Records and clothing worn by these stars, and Country Music Hall of Fame. It was amusing and entertaining, but I still can't believe it. And you know, right across the street from the place there, it's a vacant lot now at the site, that says there will rise here in the future the Gospel Music Hall of Fame. What do you think of that? They also have here a Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. Crazy. Well, we came back, and meanwhile, at the motel, I tried a couple of times again to call Lucas, and still no answer. So I began to think of somebody else around Nashville I might have had on my list, but I eliminated because I wanted Lucas and Gooch were the top ones. And I looked on the list, and there was Johnny Gill. And I checked over his address, and it wasn't too far away, so I called him up, and he was nice. He was a little hard of hearing, but he'd be willing to talk, so I planned to go out there about 7:30. So we went down and ate around 6 and came back, and I left here to go over to Gill's house. And got there about 7:30 in Sweetbriar, a little bit southwest of the center of town. A nice residential neighborhood there, quiet. Old house, and he came out to greet me. So the interview ran for about an hour, I guess. The first half, the first side, fairly of this tape, fairly solid, but then things began to thin out on this side, as one can readily tell. Let me check this. Okay. We sat out on the back patio. It was daylight for about an hour. Again, it got kind of dark though later, so we turned the light on. He's a tall man. He's 6 foot, the encyclopedia says 6'2" and 190 pounds. He's tall, he doesn't look that heavy now. Gray hair, he has most of it. He reminded me a little bit of Randolph Downs, the historian at Toledo University, with his wavy dark hair and the shape of his face and his manner a little bit. He was soft-spoken, pleasant drawl, was a little hard of hearing, not too articulate. Memory was a little hazy here and there. Didn't have too much to say. Generally, this was a rather difficult interview. There is much more that I'm sure he could have said, but it wasn't an easy conversation. He was very nice, we had a nice chat, but it was kind of hard getting things out of him, as you can readily see. He jumped around a little bit, and it was kind of hard keeping things in track, and I finally gave up after a while. Just zeroed in on a few broad questions, but I don't think it was too successful. It would be a good one to use as a test for students to see how they would have handled some of these things. His wife was not there. The house is being torn up. He says he's painting and redecorating it later. It's certainly true. He signed the ball for me. After I asked about pictures, he went and came out with a two-frame pictures in a joint frame, about 8x10, where the frame is hinged and you close it like a book. Two 8x10 pictures of himself as a Chicago Cub. And there wasn't enough light outside, even though they had the little overhead light on, so we went in and I took those with a 35mm camera, and they probably won't come out. I also took a picture of himself standing with an oil painting of him done by his wife. The place is filled with oil paintings she does. This was a very nice recent portrait of himself sitting comfortably in a rocking chair. So I got a picture of him holding that picture. He also signed for me and gave me three postcard size cards, much like those Jim Rowe cards that I have. Two with the Cubs uniform and one in Washington. He signed those for me and gave them to me. He, as he indicated, he had some stuff up packed away, didn't know where it was though, so there wasn't much hope for that. Mrs. Gill, as I say, wasn't there, but after we went in, I asked him if she would come down. I'd like to meet her. So he called her, and she finally came down upstairs. She'd been upstairs resting, I guess. She was a small woman. She had blonde hair and very pleasant. She's a Nashville gal, and they have this very pleasant speaking pattern. Very nice, hospitable. And she knew my name. I don't know where she got it from. I just said it that once on the phone this afternoon. She answered the phone, and I said, Gene Murdoch. The only time I said it, and she picked it up because when she came downstairs, Mr. Murdoch. So she remembered it. So I complimented her on her paintings. Maybe that. That was the right thing to do, but they were nice paintings. So she came out in the back. She wanted to hear part of the tape, so we went out and I played about the last 10 minutes of the first side of this tape.
She was quite interested in that. I began packing my gear away then. We talked generally. She would have been a good one to have in the interview because she was quite a much freer talker, had more initiative in the conversation, and would have been able to fill in a lot of gaps and to spur his recollections. A couple of things she said, when the portion of the tape came up about his being thrown out of games, and three or four standard, she said about the time, the first game she went to, which he played, where he was thrown out of the game, she said, oh, she was so embarrassed. He thought this was dreadful. She wanted to hide. And then she found out it wasn't so unusual for him to be thrown out of the game, so then she didn't think it was quite so bad, but she was horrified that first time. She said she did go to a lot of the games, enjoyed it, didn't know much about baseball before, but learned. I traveled occasionally with the club, I guess. They got married in 1932 when he was with Chattanooga, I believe. Although she was not from there, she's from Nashville. They have no children. She expressed great interest in the tape, and I offered to make a copy and send it to her of that. And she didn't want me to go out of my way to do this, but I volunteered to do it, so I will. They don't have a recorder, but I said, well, maybe something you know has one you can borrow. Or they're not really that expensive, maybe you'll want to have one of your own. So I guess this was a new experience to have them get on tape like this. She was chatting about various things and asked me about Warren Harding, if he wasn't from my town. And I said, I know it was Marion, not Marietta. Chat a little bit about Harding and mentioned what a great baseball fan he was, how he would have the stars of the day come to the White House for dinner and chat with the president. What else did we talk about? His years out in the Pacific Coast League. Lefty, she says, she asked, did he tell you about playing for Lefty O'Doul? He said, no, I was out. San Francisco. And I said about that time, I said, I think I better put this tape back on and interview you, too. I remember a lot of these things. She chuckled and said, no, I don't remember much. We talked on a little bit. 15, 20 minutes more out there. I was sipping the lemonade he brought, a delicious glass of lemonade. He said, sorry, didn't have anything more, but this is a teetotaling house. Well, which reminds me of something else that came up there. How she said that something to this effect, Johnny's career would have been lasted much longer if he wasn't such a playboy, something like that, which of course I didn't know anything about, he didn't mention it. And he says, well, you're probably right. I wasn't like Kent Greenfield, he talked about earlier, who drank himself out of the opinions, but I had my fun. So. There's something there which, if I'd known about, I might have pursued a little bit had the tape been on. But apparently he was enjoyed himself in baseball, too. And of course, invited me to come back any time. I said maybe write them if we're coming down again and they can dig out some of the scrapbooks or whatever they do have packed away, which he doesn't know where it is right now, but they do have something. I mentioned the minor league record book, which Sabre's putting out, and what the idea of it was, and that he would be in it. And she mentioned that, Johnny, didn't you get something from somebody about your minor league record trying to fill in some gaps? She says, I think that's what it was. They're putting together this book, and they wanted more information from you. He'd forgotten it, but this remembered, this recalled it to his mind. He said, yes, I think that's right. So I told him they would certainly get a copy when that came out. So I want to make sure that happens if they don't get one. through ordinary channels, we don't hear about it that somebody does contact them. Anything else happened there? Those were the main themes. He spoke about his artificial hip, which he had put in some time ago. He walks with something of a limp. But if he can paint his house and be decorated, he must be in pretty good shape. I can't think of much more to say at this time, so I think I will sign off and perhaps use the rest of the tape for some comment on one of the other interviews we have coming up. Tomorrow on August 3rd, we're going to travel down to Alabama, perhaps go to the Huntsville Space Center, and then on to Tuscaloosa, where on Thursday, the 4th of August, I'm due to have the interview with Joey Sewell and hopefully Rick Stevens. But I know Sewell's all right. He suggests Stevenson will be too, but I'll have to wait and see. That's all for today, August 2nd, 1977. It's about 11:30 at night now. I'm signing off from the bathroom of our Expressway Motel in Nashville, Tennessee.